So we're in the midst of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. He's just given us the Beatitudes, and next week he will say, "You have heard it said, but I say to you." The sermon is a fulfillment of Moses' law, not a contradiction to it. And it is a description of what life ought to be, what life ought to look like, what kingdom of heaven life looks like. The great N.T. Wright reminds us that this sermon is a description of a life and a creation repaired under the reign and rule of Jesus, the Messiah. Signs of that repair are the followers of Jesus, who are poor in spirit, meek, peacemakers, pure in heart, etc. Now, we tend to privatize, do we not? I have my relationship with Jesus. Don't ask me about it. Let's not talk about it. Let's keep that to ourselves. We all have this private faith. Faith we see as a private matter, Jesus and me. But when Jesus says, "You are the salt of the earth," this would have an advantage if we had the King James Version, because it says, "Ye are the salt of the earth." You all. I don't like to say y'all. And I feel like a Cowboys fan or something. You all are the salt of the earth. You all are the light of the world. He uses the plural form of you. And in fact, most of the New Testament writers, when they write their letters, use the plural form of you. It's written to the community, for everyone. Using that form assumes that the faith is not just an individual thing, but the Christian faith is practiced as a body, as a whole, together. That makes the Sermon on the Mount a little more accessible, because we're not waking up every day thinking, "Am I poor in spirit enough? Am I meek enough today? Have I done enough to be a peacemaker?" Now, those are good questions to ask, but it really applies to all of us as a whole. John Wesley said, "If we keep the Christian religion from being seen, we make it of no effect. And to turn Christianity into a solitary religion is to destroy it." Dietrich Bonhoeffer says, "Flight into the invisible is a denial of our call." As much as we would like to hide our faith, or only see it something that we do invisibly, Jesus has other ideas. He has two interesting images for the church, the people of God, members of the kingdom of heaven: salt and light. And there are multiple meanings for these metaphors. Salt purifies, salt cleanses. Salt provides taste. When you have salt, you become, what, thirsty for something else. Light, of course, is something that is a way to show the way. It is also a way to expose that which is dark. What about this salt thing? One of my mentors for many years was Father Art Latta, who passed away a few years ago. And Father Art and I would actually go through this building. This is an old building. An old building has a lot of things going on in it, spiritual things even. And you have to make sure that those negative spiritual things, evil, is out and the spirit is in. You have to do that every so often, kind of like spring cleaning. And he told me, and we did this together, he told me to use salt. To sprinkle salt in front of windows and doors, all of the openings. I thought that was fascinating. He also recommended to do that when you're blessing your house. When we bless houses, salt. Not just water and incense, but salt. And I wondered why. John Hygel says of salt, Salt is an image of transformation. People use it to flavor food or to preserve it from rotting. Priests used it in the Old Testament to purify sacrifices. Speaking of the community of the disciples, Jesus says, "You are the flavor in a dull, insipid world. Your lives will purify and reclaim a corrupt, rotting society." Then he says of light, "The idea of light coming into a world of darkness expresses hope and relief." Salt represents purity. In the Old Testament, when the children of Israel came upon water that was undrinkable, the prophet Elisha, remember him, threw some salt into the water. The Lord used that to purify it. Some early Christian practices used salt and oil in exorcisms. And even little Jewish babies were rubbed with salt, again, to symbolize purity. Well, there's another way the salt and light were used in the ancient world. Forgive me for using scatology again. But what they would do is they would get camel patties. You know what a camel patty is? It doesn't taste very good. Special sauce doesn't work on a camel patty. But you get a camel patty, and you do this to the camel patty, and then you put salt, rub salt into the camel patty, and they had clay ovens, and some places in the world actually still do this. You can get a hot pita bread this way. They'd put the camel patty into the clay oven, and it would feed the fire. And it actually makes for wonderful coals, apparently. Keep that in mind next time you're in the Middle East. Need something to start a fire with. But what happens to that? Eventually, it just dissolves, and it's not worth anything except to be thrown out and trampled upon. Don't know if Jesus was thinking of that in particular, but it works as well. But think about that. You kind of have those two images put together. You have the coal, the fire, light, and you have the salt with it going together. Something inside to reflect God's kingdom. Notice also that Jesus says, "You are the salt of the earth." Not "you must be," or "please try to be," or "do your best to be." Bonhoeffer again, "It is not for the disciples to decide whether they will be the salt of the earth, for they are, whether they like it or not. They have been made salt by the call they have received." Again, it's not "you are the light of the world." They are already the light because Christ has called them. They are light which is seen of others. They cannot be otherwise. And if they were, it would be a sign that they have not been called. So whether we like it or not, we are the salt, we are the light. And therefore, what comes from us, what comes out of our mouths, what comes from our behavior, how we reflect that to the rest of the world, is extremely important. Are we being salt and light by what we say? Are being salt and light by what we post on social media? I know all of you do that every day. Or are we doing something else? What we are called collectively to be is an intentional community of salt and light, purifying, pleasing, guiding, showing people the way to Jesus. Thomas Merton visited China, actually in the last days of his life. And one of the Catholic nuns there, doing more evangelism among the Chinese people, and why they were not trying to convince Buddhists and Hindus of the truth of Christianity. Merton replied, "What we are asked to do at present is not so much to speak of Christ as to let him live in us so that people may find him by feeling how he lives in us." What a wonderful image. Jesus' images of salt and light imply that the people of God are encountered in the world around them in intimate ways. You cannot provide light for the path or preservation for food without there being a direct encounter with darkness and food. You can't have saltiness if no one has a taste of what you are about. We can't be salt and light if we do not see ourselves as salt and light. St. John Chrysostom says, "You are accountable not only for your own life, but also for that of the entire world." Think of that also in the plural. We are all accountable not only for our own lives, but also for those of the entire world. What does that mean? In the words of Wesley, we should follow after love and desire to spend and be spent for our brothers and sisters. Jean Vanier, founder of La Arche Communities, tells this story. He says, "I know a man who lives in Paris. His wife has Alzheimer's. He was an important businessman. His life was filled with busyness. But he said that when his wife fell sick, I just could not put her in an institution. So I kept her. I fed her. I bathed her. I went to Paris to visit them," says Vanier. "And this businessman, who had been very busy all of his life, said, 'Now I have changed. I have become more human.'" Vanier writes, "I got a letter from him recently. He said that in the middle of the night, his wife woke him up. She came out of the fog just for a moment and said, 'Darling, I just want to say thank you for all you're doing for me.' Then she fell back into the fog. He told me I wept and wept." Sometimes being salt and light calls us to love others, even when they cannot love in return. I might even say especially when they cannot love in return. They may live in the fog of mental illness, disability, poverty, or spiritual blindness, which is the epidemic of our age. We may only receive fleeting glimpses of gratitude, but just as Jesus has loved us in the midst of our spiritual confusion, so we continue to love others as though they walk through a deep fog. And there are some who will not love. And there are some who are hard to love. And there are some who will give us nothing in return. Even more so, we become salt and light. I close this with this Hegel quote as a challenge. "How shall we alter our daily lives so that we care about people as Jesus does? How can our vocations make a difference? Which of the world's many miseries especially moves our hearts or comes to our mind when we pray? How can our wealth and possessions aid the cause? What actions should our church take? What relationships can we build outside the church that might help people to receive God's hope and healing? What words can we say to help our friends not only receive God's mercy, but become agents of it through the life of discipleship? Jesus' embrace of us and his call to be salt and light makes our lives profoundly valuable and worthwhile, however insignificant they may seem to us at times. A return to the Beatitudes reassures us in our moments of doubt. When we ask, 'What would Jesus want me? Why would Jesus want me on his team? Or what possible impact can no names like me have?' Jesus answers, "Blessed are you For through such unlikely people as you, God is establishing his reign. Knowing that we are poor in spirit, meek and far from righteous, nevertheless, he drew us to himself to make us lights shining in the world.